Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. I gotta admit, I'm like kind of striking out lately with the new TV that I'm exploring. I'm gonna talk about some of it, but let's start with some news. So Len Goodman, who was the longtime judge of Dancing with the Stars and I think Strictly Ballroom maybe from the UK, the old dude on Dancing with the Stars, the British dude, I never liked him, thought he was kind of a douche, but he died. That was an awkward segue into that news. But yeah, Len Goodman passed away this week. He was in his 70s. He had announced earlier this year or late last year, whenever the hell Dancing with the Stars was last on, that he was done with it. And I'm assuming that was because of some health issues that maybe he was having and did not make public, but he passed away this week. Also this week, shakeups on cable news. Tucker Carlson and Don Lemon both got fired from Fox News and CNN, respectively. The Tucker Carlson news, may be shocking, but maybe also not, since the Dominion lawsuit settlement came out the day before he was fired, or the day he was fired, I forget which. And basically, Dominion Voting Systems sued Fox News because Fox News was saying that, like, you know, that they were hacked and that the voting Dominion was lying and not counting votes and blah, 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 blah. And so Dominion, who makes the voting booths, sued them for, I guess, libel, defamation. I don't fucking know. Something, because they lied. And rather than go to trial, allegedly, my assumption being because the truth would come out that people at Fox didn't actually believe that the election was stolen and that these voting systems and that Dominion was responsible for lying or anything. So rather than admit that their on-air talent knew and was purposefully not telling the truth, Fox News just settled for money. That is alleged. That is my thoughts. Don't sue me, Rupert Murdoch. I don't fucking fuck with you. Anyway. So Fox News now owes billions of dollars in the settlement to Dominion. And I would not be surprised if part of the settlement, again, this is not public or entirely public because it was a settlement and it did not go to trial. I would not be surprised if part of the settlement was that Tucker Carlson, who was the primary person, you know, pushing the narrative of the election being stolen and that Dominion, you know, not counting votes or whatever, I wouldn't be surprised if part of the settlement was that they had to fire him. So that's that. And then later that same day, and by later, I mean like maybe 20 minutes later, Don Lemon tweeted that he had been fired by CNN and alleged that CNN had not contacted him, but I guess like had, I don't know, emailed his agent or his manager or something and was like, we're not renewing his contract. You know, CNN denies that and says that they tried to meet with him, but I'm going to believe the person that was fired, not the corporation trying to cover up their asses. And basically, he was there for 17 years, and I don't think they had to give him a reason. They just, like, basically, you know, like, kind of, you subscribe to, I don't know, HBO Max, and at the end of your year, you don't subscribe again. You don't owe them an explanation of why. You just don't subscribe. So I think it was one of those cases, and he's been in some hot water recently. Like, he said that Nikki Haley wasn't in her prime or something, and some people got mad that he was being misogynist. I don't know when this was, but someone told me that he had said Soledad O'Brien was not black, so she shouldn't win an award that was meant for, or an honor that was for black people or black women in particular. I had not heard about that, but I do know that in February he was forced to take some sensitivity training and he was given some time off because of the Nikki Haley comment. And I think it kind of sucks because now we lost, I think the only, there may be a newer, I think there might be one more that CNN just recently hired for a lesser time slot, but we lost the only queer black or gay black voice on a major 24-hour news channel, and that kind of sucks, regardless of the dumb shit that he says. Not as dumb as Tucker Carlson saying that the election was stolen and that we should, you know, take over the Capitol. Perspective. And then finally, HBO Max, WB, announced that HBO Max, rather, is going to be rebranding on May 23rd and becoming just Max. I think this is dumb. I don't really understand it. It's like, I don't know if they're trying to fool people. Like, if they think that people will come to the service because it's a new service, or I don't know. Basically, it's going to be the same service, except that they're going to start merging in more Discovery Plus content. So it's going to, Warner Discovery. So like stuff like that's on HGTV and Food Network and ID Network and TLC and, you know, like all the things that are on Discovery Plus, if you subscribe to that, some of those things are also now going to be on HBO Max, and it's going to be called Max. But I also think that they're going to be getting rid of some of the other Warner Brothers catalog when they make this merge. So in order to make room, quote unquote, for the new Discovery stuff, they're going to get rid of some of the Cartoon Network and DC and Warner Brothers backlog stuff that they already have. What? I don't know. We saw that already start happening last year when they started getting rid of even their own content, like Love Life disappeared and some other stuff, Raised by Wolves, that this has been a long time coming, and they're not raising the price, which is good. So it's going to stay what it is now, and we're still going to have HBO stuff, thank God. That's the only reason I subscribe to HBO Max right now, is mostly for the HBO content. They have not released much original content this year, and their first original show in months just came out, and I'm going to talk about it this week, Love and Death. And they've just, like, it's been if you're in HBO Max for the Max side of things and not the HBO side of things, you're basically paying for nothing. Like, if you don't watch the HBO content, I don't know why you would have HBO Max. So maybe when they rebrand to Max, they'll make it more worthwhile. Like, there'll be more original content coming. But, yeah, that's happening on May 23rd. They are also allegedly going to be improving the performance. Like, I know I personally tend to have issues watching some of the back catalog stuff. Like, I don't know if I talked about this in the podcast, but around Christmas, I love to go back and rewatch all the Christmas episodes of The Middle that used to be on ABC. I loved that show. I thought it was so funny, and their Christmas episodes were so hysterical, and I love them, and I try to watch at least a few of them every year. So this year, I watched them on HBO Max. I mean, I don't know why I said this year. So the past couple of years, since HBO Max has existed, I've watched them on HBO Max. Well, this past year, I downgraded and got the ad plan because they raised the price, and I was like, I'm not paying $150 a year to not have ads, especially because they were removing shit when my subscription was being renewed. So, like, I'm good with the $100. And especially because they don't typically show commercials during when they have HBO content. It's usually just for Max Originals and the WB back catalog. Anyway, long story longer, I was watching The Middle, and every time I went to, it went to commercial, like the 15 or 30 second ad breaks, it would short circuit basically, and my screen would blink and the episode would never come back. And I would have to log out and then go back into the app and pick up where I just left off. And then I contacted support. They were like, oh, this is a you issue. And I'm like, but it works on one of my Rokus and not the other. So it's not, it's a you issue. It's not my fucking Wi-Fi, but thanks. So maybe that won't happen anymore if they're improving the performance. But I know, like, that happened to me frequently. And it also happened to me when I was trying to watch a movie that was like an HBO movie, and it kept just cutting out and showing the ads. And I was like, you're not supposed to cut out of HBO content. And it would just be in the middle of a sentence. It would just start showing ads. So annoying. So, and they're also going to have better recommendations, easier sign-in. I don't know how it could be easier. And they're introducing pins on profiles for so you can separate adult and child content. So that is coming May 23rd. All right, lots of renewals and cancellations since I didn't do them the last time when Andy was on. So renewals, Apple TV Plus renewed The Big Door Prize, which is currently airing for season 2, and Eugene Levy's docuseries The Reluctant Traveler for season 2. ABC renewed The Rookie, Station 19, The Good Doctor, and Will Trent, and Hulu renewed Reasonable Doubt for season 2. Cancellations. Fox officially canceled The Resident after 6 seasons, and the lead guy on that, Matt Shuri, I don't know if that's how you say his name. It's a CZ, Jury, whatever. He's already joining the new season of American Horror Story, so he didn't waste time. Netflix canceled Bling Empire and its spinoff that I don't think ever actually came out. Sex Life, Human Resources, and Big Mouth. So Big Mouth and Human Resources both got renewed for final seasons. So Human Resources will have a final 2nd season, and Big Mouth will have a final 8th season. Apple TV canceled Truth Be Told, the Octavia Spencer show, and Dear Edward. And Disney Plus canceled the National Treasure reboot, which I don't know if I talked about on the podcast, but it was very boring and I did not like it. Alrighty. So like I said, I'm kind of striking out a little bit with the new TV that I'm watching. I have started and am not enjoying The Last Thing He Told Me, which is Jennifer Garner on Apple TV Plus, and that is based on a book that was a bestseller. I've seen it around. I've never read it, but it's like in that white woman in trouble genre of books. You know the ones I'm talking about. Gone Girl, Girl on a Train. Usually they have girl in the title. This one doesn't, but it could. And it's about a woman who is newly a stepmother to a teen girl. And her husband one day goes missing when the company he works for is raided by the FBI. And he has time to leave a note for both her, Hannah, I think is her name. I think it's Hannah. And the daughter, don't remember her name. I've watched 4 or 5 episodes. I don't remember names. But the stepmom and the daughter both get notes. The daughter gets like this really long note about how much he loves her and he'll be back. And, you know the truth about me. Don't listen to what anyone's saying, blah, blah, blah. And then for his wife, the note he leaves her just says, protect her. So already I'm annoyed. Already I'm like, this stupid motherfucker has all the time in the world to write a goddamn love letter to his daughter, and he can't explain anything to his wife. Just writes, protect her. That's lazy fucking writing. From the woman who wrote the book, who also adapted the TV show with her husband, who is a TV person, Josh Safran. I'm pretty sure that's who it is. So, like, right off the bat, I'm annoyed, right? Like, you are asking me to suspend so much disbelief already in these white women in trouble stories. But now you want me to believe that this man is in such a hurry that the only note he can get off in time to his wife just says, protect her. But he has time to like wax poetic to his damn daughter about how much he loves her and that she knows the truth. Get the fuck out of here. Get the fuck out of here. Stupid. Also, it takes place in Sausalito. Stupid. Also, they live on a houseboat. Stupid. I'm annoyed on so many levels that like this is just it is white people shit. Like, and I am a white person. I enjoy white nonsense. It's white nonsense for the sake of like quirkiness, or I don't know. Like, what the fuck is the point of setting this on, of like having a main character who's a woodworker? She makes wooden sculptures and she lives on a houseboat in Sausalito right outside of San Francisco. And like, she drives an old beat up like 1950s Hallmark Channel red Ford looking fucking truck. Cause she's quirky. But she's also of the earth cause she works with her hands. And I'm just like, it's just so annoying. It's dumb as shit. Right? Like, the lengths that these authors go to like try to make their main middle-aged lady characters like interesting, but also just like you, because this could happen to you, is so annoying to me. And I the whole time I was watching the first episode of this, I kept thinking of the Netflix show The Woman the girl in the window across the street from the woman. Wait, the woman in the... The girl in the house... The girl... You know the one I'm talking... I've talked about it. The Kristen Bell one. It's been so long since I watched it that I forgot the damn name. The woman in the house across the street from the girl in the window. I think that's what it is. The woman in the house across the street from the girl in the window. There, I think that's what it is. Okay, anyway. Where she's making fun of all of these characters and how they all have these like traumatic backstories and everyone lies, but you know, you cover up your lies because that's what we do when we're middle-aged and middle class and white. And I don't know. It's just there's nothing interesting about it. It's been told a million times. Jennifer Garner is fine, but like it's a stepmom trying to relate to a bitchy teenage daughter. That's it. That's the basic relationship. I don't need that. But am I watching it? I am, because it's on Apple TV Plus. I don't have it for much longer, and I feel like I should be using it. But it's not good, and I barely pay attention to it. And the episodes are weirdly short. And why Apple TV Plus will not just release things for binging? I don't understand. Like, there are certain, like, I miss the binge model. I miss the here's the whole series, watch it. I'm not a fan of this new, like, we're going to release 1 to 3 or 1 to 4 episodes at once, and then one episode a week for like 3 more weeks. What's the fucking point of that? What is the point of that? Just drop them all at once or release them weekly. But like, you have to be smart about what shows you're releasing weekly. Like, The Last Thing He Told Me does not need to be released weekly. It could have all dropped at once. And then I would have just sat there and watched the whole thing or watched episodes 1 and 2 and been like, I'm bored. What happens at the end? And that would have been the end of it. Anyway, that show is bad. I'm disappointed in it. I had higher hopes because Reese Witherspoon produced it. Jennifer Garner's in it. I just wanted better. And like I said, I read all these books. I read all of these white women in trouble books. I'm a fan of the genre. But other than the movie version of Gone Girl, I have yet to encounter an adaptation of one of those books that is anything but garbage. They all suck. Even when, like, I mean, sometimes it's because the book sucks, like The Girl on the Train, but they all suck. I'm over it. I also started Beef on Netflix, which a bunch of people were telling me to watch, and I've seen a whole slew of stuff on social media and news articles and opinion pieces and reviews and stuff that people really like this show, and I am very confused by what people enjoy about this show. This 10-episode series literally should have been a movie. Or like one 45-minute episode of American Horror Stories on FX on Hulu, whatever it is. Like, this is not, for me, a story that needed 10 fucking episodes to be told. The general setup I liked, which is why I watched it, of like, there's a guy. I don't remember anyone's names ever in these shows. Like, I've watched 6 episodes and I don't know anyone's names. Danny? Is it Danny? Maybe it's Danny. Steven Yeun from The Walking Dead and Minari? Yeah. He's a dude who wants to return something at a store. He doesn't have the receipt, so he's in a pissy mood. So he goes into his car and he starts to back out of a parking lot without looking. And he almost backs into a white SUV. So the owner of the SUV lays on their horn and starts to drive away and then flips him off. So he decides to follow the SUV and like causes havoc and damage over downtown LA. And then the white SUV scares the fuck out of him by almost crashing into him then, and then drives away. And then like Danny makes it his mission to find out who drives this SUV. And then we find out that it is Ali Wong. Again, don't remember her character's name. But Ali Wong, who is a stand-up comedian, she was a guest judge on Drag Race this year for the episode where Anitra and Marsha lip-synced against each other, and she had the greatest reaction where she was just, like, throwing her hands in the air and screaming. It was wonderful. Anyway, it was a she that was driving this vehicle, and she's stressed out at home because she has a high-stress job, and she's anxious because she's, like, some of a public figure, and she's, like, having issues with her marriage, and she... I don't know if she doesn't like her kid or if I'm just reading into it that she doesn't like her kid, but I don't like her kid. And they're both like, he's under pressure. Danny is under pressure because his business is floundering. His parents lost their motel and had to move back to Korea. And he's trying to make it. And he lives with his loser brother who just plays video games, but is fucking hot as shit. And his cousin is the one that sold out the parents, and it's why they lost the motel. And he was in prison. Now he's on parole. So, like, he has a mess of a life. And then Ali Wong has a mess of a life because her marriage is crumbling. And, I don't know, she's trying to sell her business or go into business with Maria Bello from Coyote Ugly. I don't know. There's too much going on. And also, nothing happens. This is my issue with TV right now in general, especially over the past few years, is that there are these shows that we give episode orders of like 8 to 13 episodes, let's say, for a streaming service. And it's a story that needs maybe 3 or 4 episodes, up to 6, let's say. Maybe 6 episodes, we're being generous, still a whole story. And instead, they're telling it over 8 to 13 episodes. So you have all these episodes where nothing is happening, but there's a million characters. Because they're like, oh, we have 4 extra hours to fill. Let's add people and things and just keep it going. Why? So there's a whole subplot where, like, Ali Wong catfishes Steven Nguyen's brother, the hot one. But then he finds out that she's really who she is, and they end up sleeping together anyway in Las Vegas. Why are they in Vegas? I don't fucking know. And then Danny and the cousin crash a conference that Ali Wong is speaking at, and she gets them arrested. And, like, this show, if it was just a revenge story, I would get it. Like, if this is a road rage story, let's say this is like Joyride, but a TV show, I could be down for that. The Joyride with Paul Walker and Steve Zahn, where they fuck with a trucker and he stalks them across the country to try to kill him. That Joyride. Let's say it's that kind of like revenge type story, but as a TV show that has some comedic elements that stars Ali Wong and Steven Nguyen, I would be into that. I would be down for that. But instead, like, by the end of, I think, the first or second episode, like, Danny pees all over Ali Wong's house as his revenge. And, like, then she gets him arrested. It's so, like, it's just them one-upping each other the whole season. But, like, that's the fun part, is watching them one-up each other. But then the other, like, 30 minutes of every 35-minute episode is just them talking and, like, being in boring lives. And I don't like it. Please tell me what is interesting and entertaining about this show, because I don't get it. I don't get what is entertaining about this show. And I've been trying to, they're 10 35 to 40 minute episodes, and I've been trying to get through them for 2 weeks now. And I just cannot. I'm halfway through episode 6. Like, I can't even watch a full 35 minute episode at a time. I get bored. Sorry about it. And then the other one that I'm actually mad at, I'm actively angry at, is Love and Death on HBO Max. Now let's talk about this. So Love and Death was first announced 2 years ago. In May of 21, HBO Max picked up the show starring Elizabeth Olsen, Wanda from the Marvel Universe, I think, was she nominated for an Oscar for Martha Marcy May Marlene? She might have been. She should have been if she wasn't. Wonderful actress, right? The other Olsen sister, who is now just the Olsen sister. Love her. She's wonderful. Starring her, Lily Robb from the American Horror Story franchise and a whole bunch of other things and, you know, Broadway and stuffs. Jesse Plemons, who is Kirsten Dunst's husband, and I think got nominated for an Oscar for Power of the Dog. He was also on Fargo. And then Patrick Fugit, who will always, to me, be Patrick, I think was his name in this too. His name's Pat on the show. Anyway, from Saved. He will always be from Saved to me. Love him. And then Kristen Ritter as well. So all these people, like, that's a great cast. And it's telling the story of Candy Montgomery, which, if that name fucking sounds familiar, let me tell you why. Because almost a year ago to the day, Hulu released a series of the same story called Candy. And I reviewed it here on the podcast. And it starred Jessica Biel and Pablo Schreiber and Justin fucking Timberlake. And it is the story of Candy Montgomery, who was a housewife in the 70s, 1980, I think, was when the murder happened. And she was having an affair with her friend's husband, who she knew from church. And when the affair ended, everyone found out, her husband found out, and the wife, the why can't I find the word? The friend whose husband she was sleeping with, they both found out. And now Candy alleged that Betty, who was the friend, attacked her with an axe. So she wrestled it away from her and then whacked her back with it 41 times until she died. So Candy claimed self-defense and that it was all over her jealousy of Candy sleeping with Betty's husband. The Candy series on Hulu played it more like that Candy was kind of a sociopath, because let's be fucking real, you kind of have to, she was. And anyway, that's the story of Candy Montgomery, the story of Candy on Hulu from last year, and the story of Love and Death on HBO Max, which, let's start there. Let's start with the title, Love and Death. Why? This title is so terrible. It tells you nothing about the show. It tells you nothing about anything, really. It could be about anything. It's generic as all fuck. And maybe that was the point, because the show also is fucking generic. It's by David E. Kelly, who did, what the hell was the one, Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant, The Undone? Undone, I think. He did Big Little Lies. He does Big Sky over on ABC. He did The Practice back in the 90s. Very prolific TV writer, director, and producer. But mostly celebrated recently for Big Little Lies, and has tried to kind of like recreate that success of, like, you know, again, suburban ennui, white women driving around a town getting into trouble. There you go. And that's, okay, so that's what they wanted to accomplish, was like a generic domestic drama, but also with a little bit of a true crime element to draw in those crazies. I guess it succeeded. The problem is these episodes are so long. They are legit a full hour. They are 50 some minutes. And they are so slow. So HBO Max released the first three episodes on Thursday. And now it's one episode a week until the finale, which fucking kill me. And in these first episodes, all we get is Candy and Alan initiating the affair. The affair happening. The husband, Pat, finding out. And we end in the third episode, the final shot is the day of the murder, Candy going to Betty's house, and the last shot of the episode is Betty emerging with the axe. So in the first three episodes, there are a lot of shots of open roads, of trees. There are a lot of numbers where we're in church and they're singing hymns, because they want us to know that Candy was big into church. She was big into church. She was a devout Methodist. Lots of scenes take place at fucking church. They talk about Jesus a lot. Two episodes in a row, episodes 2 and 3, see two different couples going to marriage counseling at Marriage Encounter, which is like a marriage counseling retreat. First, we get to see Alan and Betty do it, and then we get to see Candy and Pat do it. Why do we need both couples doing it in back-to-back episodes? I don't fucking know. Anyway, there are a lot of scenes of Candy just like sitting in her kitchen singing along to the radio. There are a couple scenes of her like driving in her car, listening to music, sitting out on her deck, smoking cigarettes. There is no urgency to this show at all. It moves at a snail's pace and it wants you to be on board for that. But like, nothing exciting is happening. These people are unlikable. And actually, let's talk about that. I have a lot of thoughts about this. And a lot of it doesn't have to do with the actual show itself, because nothing's really happening. But the way the show is made, let's talk about how Elizabeth Olsen is playing Candy. And she is gorgeous, beautiful, stunning, ethereal, angelic. She is absolutely breathtaking. In life, just she's a famous actress. Of course, she's pretty. The real Candy Montgomery looked like Jessica Biel did in Candy, where she had a bad perm that looked like an afro, giant bifocal glasses. She was not what we would conventionally consider a beautiful woman. Not that she was unattractive, but like, you wouldn't look at her and be like, oh, that's a gorgeous person. She's drop dead beautiful. She's a model. That's how we would think of Elizabeth Olsen, I think. And they don't ugly up Elizabeth Olsen. They uglied up Jessica Biel, to be accurate. They did not do this with Elizabeth Olsen. And all I can think is that because they want us to root for Candy. And, you know, in America, in contemporary society, we love nothing more than to root for a skinny, beautiful person. We do not like average-looking people. We do not like overweight people. And to prove that point, go ahead and search. There's a viral tweet it's a picture of Jesse Plemons, who plays Alan on the show. And it says something like, someone tell me what this man has on HBO to keep getting roles. And it's all these people agreeing with like, yeah, he's ugly. I can't believe Kirsten Dunst married him. He could never get Elizabeth Olsen in real life. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Because Elizabeth Olsen is not what Candy Montgomery looked like. And it's just frustrating that they're like, oh, we can make the man ugly. The men we can ugly up. We can ugly up Patrick Fugit because Patrick Fugit is adorable. I think also hot. And they uglied him up with a bad haircut and a comb over and some giant glasses and some nerdy wardrobe. They didn't do that with Elizabeth Olsen. They made her look hotter. Like, they feathered her hair. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's beautiful. And, other than to make us sympathize with her, and it's easier for people to sympathize with attractive people, I don't know why they would do that. Like, we have photos of Candy Montgomery. Go ahead and Google her right now. I will wait. I will keep talking. I would like you to open up your web browser on your phone when you are listening to this and Google Candy Montgomery and see what she looks like. She doesn't fucking look like Elizabeth Olsen. Actually, you know what? I will post a side-by-side to Instagram and Twitter at Fake TV Critic on both. Go ahead and look for it. Go ahead and look for it. What is the purpose of this? And not only that, not only does... And the other reason I think they're doing this... Sorry, backtracking. The other reason I think they're doing this is to garner sympathy for Candy is they made Betty, the Lily Robb character, the best friend, into the shrewiest shrew of all shrews. She is insufferable in the first episode. Like... It's as if every scene that she is in is meant to justify that her husband cheated on her for years with her friend and to justify Candy eventually murdering her. Like, she nags. I was going to say niggles. Is that a word? Niggles? Is that a thing? I don't know. I'll look it up when I'm done. She nags. She nags at her husband constantly. They're trying to conceive a kid, and it's not really working that well. And they have a conversation about why. This is like maybe 15 minutes into the first episode. They have a conversation about why, and she's very high stress and high anxiety. And Alan says, well, you know, the doctor said it would be easier to get pregnant if you weren't so stressed all the time. Meaning, like, stop stressing out about what time of the day you're allegedly at your peak fertility. Like, you're ovulating, we'll have sex. Multiple times a day if we need to try to conceive. We will have sex. Relax. And she goes, oh, so it's my fault. You're saying it's my fault. And she like flies off the handle. And that's just how she is. Then in the third episode, they start painting her as a psychological, mentally ill person. Where they're like, oh, you know, she has depression and anxiety. And then she finds a lump on her breast and goes to these doctors and has a whole scene where she's telling Candy, before she finds out about the affair, you know, they make me feel crazy where, you know, they go in and I go in and then they tell me that I don't have cancer, but I do have depression and anxiety and I'm on so many prescriptions for it. So like, again, as if they are blaming Betty for her own death later in the episode and in the season that like, well, she was unhinged. She was unbalanced. She was on meds. She was depressed and she had anxiety and she was insufferable. Like, sympathize with Candy, like whether we're trying to blame her or not, but like basically that they don't want us to blame Candy. Like that is the feeling that I am getting. And it is very unnerving in a way. Because at the end of the day, a real person named Betty Gore lost her life to a real person named Candy Montgomery. Not to Elizabeth Olsen and not to like this salacious soap opera shit in their lives. We're like, I understand why this is such a compelling story and why two shows were in production at the same time, racing to tell it first. And I mean, obviously the Hulu version won because Elizabeth Olsen was busy being a Marvel superhero on her own TV show and in a bunch of movies and shit. They had to wait. But It has all the hallmarks of a great true crime story and of a Lifetime movie. You know what I mean? Where, like, it's two friends. It's in Texas. It's in the 70s. We miss the 70s. We have the only other decade that we have this kind of nostalgia for is the 90s. And I feel like it's because both of them. And the 50s, too. And I wonder, and my theory is that, like, the 50s, we have all this nostalgia for because it was following World War II. The 70s, because it was following the unrest of the Civil War and Vietnam and all that. And the 90s, because of the trauma of the Reagan administration and AIDS and the stock market and all that shit. So that was a tangent. Anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, all the hallmarks of what makes this a story that true crime people are obsessed with. Like, it's extramarital affair, but then it's the hypocrisy of it because they're such devout Christians. It's that they're in Texas. It's that they're young and white and there's kids involved and it ends in a murder and it's a friend murdering a friend. But no one knows what really happened because only one of them got out alive. And in the whole, like, I have to think that they are going off of, like, Candy was acquitted. Candy was acquitted of this murder. She was never spent time behind bars for it. The jury thought that she acted in self-defense. And the reason they thought that is because she passed a polygraph. And now we know now at this point, polygraphs are not admissible in court. You can fake them very easily. And Candy, who, like, if you watch the Hulu version, and even there's hints of it in this HBO Max one, is a sociopath. She lies very easily. Like, her and Alan make a list of all the pros and cons of having an affair. Like, that's not something that, like, if you can do that, you can probably fake a polygraph. Do you know what I'm saying? Anyway. And also just like the evidence, when you're in self-defense, you don't swing an axe 41 times in self-defense. Go the next time you're near an axe, pick it up and swing it 41 times and see what your body feels like afterward. That is not, like, that is some hard work. That is some passionate shit. Anyway, especially for a little tiny person like Candy was. Where was I? This feels very gross because it feels like they're painting Betty out to be a very clear soap opera villain, an antagonist. And it feels like they're very much wanting us to identify with and empathize with Candy. But at the end of the day, Candy murdered Betty. Whether it was in self-defense or not, Betty is dead because of Candy. So it feels very icky. And then when you add in the fact that, like, they're making Candy very attractive, I feel icky about true crime in general. I think I've talked about this before, where, like, the obsession people have with true crime is not only odd to me, but very off-putting and troubling in a lot of ways. That people get so attached to, like, thinking that they are puzzle masters or that they're overly intelligent or that they know better than cops or investigators. Like, I always come back to when Naya Rivera disappeared in the boat on the lake. And all these fucking assholes on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and Reddit were, like, looking at satellite images of the area around the lake and were like, there's a cabin there. Someone needs to check that cabin. And I'm like, first of all, you're fucking stupid. Of course, if they're on an inch by inch, like, perimeter search around the lake, of fucking course they're going to check that cabin. Shut up. You are, like, just because you have Google Earth does not make you a detective. Stay in your lane. And then when it came out later that when they found her body underwater, that, like, the reason they were not, like, treating it like she was kidnapped or, like, left her son and had a drunken or drug-induced episode the way some people implied, is that her son told people when he was rescued that he saw her go back underwater. That's why they were checking the lake. But then these fucking people on the internet think that they can solve something that, like, they don't have all the information for because, I don't know, they read an Agatha Christie book or they listened to a podcast one time. It's very frustrating because they seem to forget that these are real people. Like, the true crime part of it, the true part, is the part that matters. And Love and Death, like, starts with the title card after the introduction that says, this is a true story. Not, this is based on a true story. This is a true story. And then every episode ends with a card that says that Love and Death is a dramatization of real events, but they've added, like, dialogue and characters and shit. Like, they're leaning in hard to the true crime aspect of this, but then they're not treating these people like people. They're treating them like cartoons, like exaggerations. It's really frustrating. And it, again, it feels icky. And on top of that, it's not fucking good. It's not interesting. It is boring. It is glacially paced. Like I said, I've watched 3 full hours of this show solely so that I could be like, okay, it must get, like, there's a murder that happens. It has to be get interesting at that point. And it ends before the murder happens. So, like, I'll probably watch the 4th episode and see where it goes then. But, like, I'm the idiot. I'm the reason these bad shows keep getting made, because I listen to people who tell me you should be watching this, and then I do, and I don't like it. Or I watch it and I don't like it, and I still keep watching it, because I'm a sucker, and I'm a completist. I can't start something and not finish it. Like, at the very least, I need to finish a season. Some of, like, the very few shows that I have given up on, the most recent one was Riverdale. I gave up on that, like, at a break. Like, it was at the end of a storyline. It was the weird, like, 5-episode other universe of Riverdale, if you watch that show. I was like, I can't do this anymore. But that was basically, like, a break point in the season. Like, it was going to start with a new story. So it was like I watched another season. Any show that I stop watching in between seasons or when it's over. Like, I can't stop in the middle of an episode or the middle of a season. I just can't do it. Especially in this case, I'm invested. So I'm just watching stuff I don't like. Like, I will finish Beef before Netflix kicks in its password sharing crackdown, which is going to be sometime this quarter, which means soon, because this quarter ends June 30th. So sometime very soon, no more password sharing unless you pay for it. I will finish Beef. I will continue watching The Last Thing He Told Me. I will continue watching Love and Death until I either break my TV or HBO Max breaks me, one or the other. But yeah, I'm just striking out. There are other shows that I want to watch that I have not started yet, but that, like, I prioritize these shows I don't like over. I really want to start Mrs. Davis on Peacock, but I might wait for the full season so I can binge it, which I think is in maybe next week, I think might be the last episode. That's Betty Gilpin from Mad Men, who plays a nun who, like, fights artificial intelligence or something. It looks weird as shit. I don't know. I want to watch that. And I want to watch Citadel on Amazon Prime, but then I heard that sucks. That's the Priyanka Chopra, Richard Madden show where they're like spies, and it's produced by the Russo brothers, speaking of Marvel Universe, who did Infinity War. So yeah, I don't really know what to do. I'm excited this week. So as of today, when the podcast releases tonight, if you're listening to this on Monday, HBO is finally premiering White House Plumbers, which is the story of it's like tangentially related to Watergate. But, like, Woody Harrelson and Justin Theroux are in it, and I'm looking forward to that. I just want things to start getting better. And I'm hopeful that it will. Like, I'm hopeful that, like, this HBO Max rebrand to Max means that we're going to get more content. Because at one point, they had so many shows that I wanted to watch that were in the can, that were ordered, whatever. Like, they're finally premiering the Gremlins animated series, Origin of the Mogwai? Mogwai, however you say it? I forget. The prequel animated series for Gremlins, Origins, Revenge of, Return of, something. Anyway, it was announced as one of the first series that HBO Max was going to make when HBO Max was announced 3 years ago. And it's just now coming out. So I'm hopeful and excited for that. Paramount Plus is really upping their content output. I'm excited for that. Like, I haven't started The Rise of the Pink Ladies yet, but I do want to get into that. And I also want to watch Fatal Attraction, which, again, I've heard is not very good, but I love Joshua Jackson. So I want to watch that as well. And once Rabbit Hole is over, I want to go back and binge that whole season. And then Drag Race All-Stars 8 is starting on May 12th. So, like, Paramount Plus is stepping its pussy up. Took them a long time as well. So I'm kind of hoping that that this will mean not only more content. Like, I've been complaining for a few months now that there's just not a whole lot of stuff coming out. And when it does come out, I don't like it. But yeah, Apple TV, also Silo is coming out this week. That looks interesting. And they have some stuff in the can, like Hijack with Idris Elba, about a plane that gets hijacked that he's on. I guess he has to, like, I don't know, negotiate with the hijackers. That looks and seems interesting. The Kristen Wiig comedy called Mrs. America. It's called something else now, but it was called Mrs. America. That should be coming out soon. So I'm grinning and bearing it at the moment. But yeah, scripted TV is not where it's at for me right now. As you heard when I was talking to Andy on the last episode, we are still loving Vanderpump Rules. New Jersey Housewives, they were in Ireland, so that was a fun couple of episodes. I think it's ending soon, so I'm looking forward to that. Orange County is coming back soon. Bravo is also doing a spinoff of Summer House called Martha's Vineyard that I will be watching. They have a ballroom dancing competition show called Dancing Queens coming up soon that I will also be watching because those ladies look fucking crazy. Atlanta Housewives starts next Sunday. So we have some, right now, Unscripted is where it's at. Oh, and also this season of Survivor is probably the best season in definitely in years. Maybe since the All Winners season, and maybe even before that. Maybe even before the All Winners. Because at the end of the day, I didn't love the All Winners season because they didn't pick a whole lot of great winners to come back, I don't think. And I don't like Tony, and he won. So anyway. But this season of Survivor is great. The best casting they've had in quite a while. And the most dynamic group of people working together in many seasons. I'm really liking it. And there are a lot of twists, but not... they don't feel as intrusive as they have recently. So that's good. And I'm just hoping they can stick the landing. Like, I'm just hoping that they're making us fall in love with these characters like Carolyn and Carson and Jam Jam and Danny. Like, I hope they're featuring them because they go far and not because they run the game and then all of a sudden get voted out at like top six. Because that's what's been happening on these shows, on these seasons. Okay. My recommendation for the week, going along with this idea of unscripted TV, is kind of where my heart is at the moment. Emergency NYC on Netflix. So in the sea of all these people saying, like, watch Beef. Beef is amazing. Watch Beef. Watch The Night Agent. Neither of which I liked. There was like the Emergency NYC popped up on my feed of like, you might enjoy this. And now why it suggested this to me, I don't know, because nothing in my watch history would make Netflix think that I would want to watch like a show about real life surgery. I hate them. Like, I hate Dr. Pimple Popper and My Feet Are Killing Me, all the TLC. I can't do the surgical stuff. I do not want to know what my insides look like. I just don't. I can't do it. And then this show I loved, even though like they literally show them cutting, like flaying people's entire bodies, like cutting off the whole top of their head and drilling a hole into their brain. Like they show that babies being ripped out of uteruses during C-sections, like kidney transplants where we watch the kidney be taken out and then implanted, a liver transplant. Like, it is some wild shit that they are showing, and it is graphic. Not like in a bad like horror way, but like in a, they do not pull, like they show you exactly what they don't pull punches. When they say they're doing a kidney transplant, they show you a kidney transplant. And it is crazy how complicated, but also how seemingly simple a lot of this stuff is. Like, there's one woman who has a brain tumor that is, like, making her go blind because it's pushing on her optic nerve. And we watch the surgery happen, and literally it's just like, okay, I'm going to drill into her brain, and, like, there's no bleeding. It's just like, oh, here's her brain, and here's a pair of scissors. Snip, snip, there's the tumor. Sew her back up. She's good. She can see now. That's crazy. It's fucking crazy. Power bodies, so complex, but also so simply pleased and issue. So it's crazy. Anyway, I highly recommend it. I think it's 8 episodes, maybe. There's one episode that I did not care for where they tried to get us to feel sorry for a flight nurse, a heli nurse. She does the helicopter deliveries. The whole thing takes place in Manhattan and Queens. And she does like transportation on a helicopter, and she's losing her job. I think this must have been shot in late 2021. Because she refuses to get vaccinated for COVID, even though she's a nurse, because she wants to know that it's not going to affect her ability to have kids. Even though she works with someone who is vaccinated and is actively pregnant and meets her child and sees that it's fine. It's stupid. It's crazy. And like, I mean, I'm glad they told that side of the story, because there are medical professionals who don't believe in COVID, who think it's not that bad, even though they've like watched people die of it, and who won't get vaccinated themselves. So as frustrating as it is to know those people are out there, they are. I just wish they had portrayed her in a more, in a less positive light, because at the end of the day, like, this is a show about people saving lives, and she's choosing to not. Anyway, Emergency NYC is my recommendation. It is all streaming currently on Netflix. Okay, that does it for this week. I'll be back with a new episode in a couple of weeks. What am I going to talk about in 2 weeks? I don't know. What's coming up? We'll see. I think the next episode is in 2 weeks. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do All Stars 8. So that's what you have to look forward to. So I'll be back in 2 weeks with a recap of the first two episodes of RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars 8, which come out on Friday, May 12th. So watch them and then come back and listen to the podcast 2 weeks from today. And I'll see you all then. Have a good week, everyone.